Hey friends, sorry for the long wait, it's Jim Miller. I'm still learning my equipment, and I wanted to take the time to get the audio sorted out before I brought you season 2. So with my heartfelt apologies and my hope that you'll stay with us as we grow, I'd like to present to you Renaissance Recall, season 2.
Renaissance Recall with Jim Miller is part of Grey Towers Productions.
Jamboree, ho! Jamboree, ho! Your ring-tailed sailors coming up behind, ho! Jamboree, ho! Jamboree, Jenny, keep your tailpiece warm. Now, me lads, be of good cheer.
Okay. And welcome to Renaissance Recall. My name is Jim Miller. It's been a while since we caught back up. It's been about 2 or 3 months. We cut off in November. We're starting back up in February. That was not intentional. There was a couple moments of getting things together. I'm also going to be recording a new portion of Renaissance Recall tonight to add to it, called Ask Bruno. So that's going to get added in before it gets posted. And I'm going to be asking tonight on social media about what do people want to ask Bruno. So...
could be interesting.
Yes, we're talking about a Renaissance man who doesn't remember which direction he's going. So we're going to see how that goes out. But then it'll be me recording and just answering a question. But tonight, we are very specifically clowning around with Pat Janelle, who for the last year or so has been playing Lady Devereaux.
Correct.
And before that, you were playing the midwife.
Correct.
And you're a nurse.
By education,
which is hysterical because technically you knew what you were talking about for the midwife, which...
ironically, yes, I did.
Which is great.
And do, I should say.
And do, yes. But let's just...
Well, one of the things that I found out in doing some of the research for the midwife character was... just about all of the things that were not available, for one thing. But I learned a lot of the history of midwifery in Europe and some of the things that they used, some of the tools of the trade, that sort of thing. And the statistics, which unfortunately are very sad, with childbirth and how many people did not make it through, that sort of thing.
Well, even with the history that we know of, with all of the noble information and, you know, things that were written down by the clerks of, like, the highborn and everything like that, it was pretty stark.
Absolutely. One of the nice things about playing that character was that she interacted or interfaced with both highborn, the nobility, and the general townsfolk.
Yeah,
she was kind of middle of the road, and it was one of the few professions for women that were respectable and could actually earn a living.
Yeah, and it would raise you up in the great chain of being.
Absolutely.
So what was your midwife character?
Our Mistress Zelda Lefevre, which happened to be two of my personal family names.
Really?
Zelda was my grandmother, and Lefevre is a family name in the family.
That's crazy. That's awesome. Let's go through. So you're not playing that anymore. You're playing Lady Devereaux.
Correct.
And how was that transition feel for going from...
I was really surprised. In some ways, the midwife character interacted more with more people. Lady Devereaux tended to be more with the nobility and not as many interactions with those. But, of course, the big thing was developing the costume, the garb for nobility. I did a lot of sewing that I wasn't really expecting to do and had never done before. So it was interesting to put it together, but apparently I did an okay job because it was approved.
And does Lady Devereaux have any specific historical reference for you? Or
no, not at all.
Just is it an actual historical character, or was this a...
She was an actual historical character. Let's see, her mother was one of Henry VIII's mistresses. fun things like that.
Who hasn't been a Henry VIII mistress?
Exactly. Her son, one son was notorious and was decapitated at some later date. Mm. Another son actually went on to marry one of, I believe it was Lettice Nollis. And a lot of interaction, intermingling within the family.
Nice.
So cousins and that sort of thing. Particularly for Lady Devereux, she doesn't. There's not a whole lot of history about her that you can find out about, unfortunately.
In some cases, that can be good. Some cases, that can be bad.
It allows me a little flexibility and freedom, of course. But it was nice playing her character. The first time I did it, though, was last year as a member of the scripted cast, and I was actually the mother of the...
Yeah. Actually, the previous 12 episodes, one of them has both Kristen and Katie as the two main female characters, and I was trying to get...
I was their patroness.
Patroness. So that was just...
It worked out. It was a lot of fun.
Oh.
Working that whole scenario, when you think about the lack of education for women during that time and how actually Queen Elizabeth was all for it, which was a wonderful change in the system. So
it was a difficult time, especially for nobility, and to have her, you know, reign for as long as she did and literally drag England back out of like the deficit,
the Dark Ages, literally,
and move her forward. You're like, wow, like how do you, like at the end of her life, she's just okay. I'm good.
Yeah. Well, when you think about all the writers, the poets, the artists that were sponsored because of her. And it's just phenomenal what a traumatic transformation occurred over the course of her lifetime within the arts particularly.
And we do kind of make the comment here that, you know, when you don't have a computer, you make a computer, and that's what Elizabeth did by teaching and educating all of her people and creating this network of information, and she made herself a giant computer that moved all across the world.
It's almost scary to think at that time without computers how much information she had at her fingertips.
And constantly coming
in.
Oh. But so does Lady Devereux have a particular occupation, or does she follow a certain thing, or like, you know, merchants?
I honestly didn't develop that part of it in terms of the character. That's something to work on this year.
Sounds good. Let's see. So let's start with in the beginning. In the beginning, how did you join up? How did you decide to join up with our little Ren Faire?
Well, the Lord Mayor of Staffordshire happens to be a personal friend, and I've known him a very long time, primarily through community theater.
Mm.
We've actually worked on shows back in the early 90s.
Oh.
So, to be specific, it was Annie Get Your Gun, and that's where he met his wife. And I caught the bouquet at their wedding.
Nice!
Many, many years ago.
Many, many years ago. Wow. That seems to be a growing... We have very few people that join VARF. We want more. But we have very few people that join VARF that don't already know somebody or got brought in. I think it one or two of them, they drove the person there to VARF, and then they turned around and...
That would not be surprising.
Strong-armed them into being a part of the cast. So you're like, oh, well, I blame them. Yeah.
Personally, coming from a community theater background... having been around that setting many, many years, like more than 30.
But we're all there now.
Yeah, I'm well there. But the talent that comes in through theater, this is one more venue to be able to use your theatrical skills.
Yeah.
And it's a good practicing ground. So
Yeah. And we do occasionally have some like hardcore theater people that join up. They're just like, how do you guys do this? And we're going,
it's the toughest training ground in the world to be able to do improv. And that's what our street people scenes are. Mm-hmm. It's nothing but improv. It's probably the hardest theatrical skill to develop. Yeah. And I think we do a pretty good job of it, to be honest.
Yeah. And we have people that compliment us. We've had people that have visited from, like, Second City, people that have had groundling training that mm-hmm. just look at us and go, this is great. Keep going.
Yes.
Or, you know, try this. And you go, what's a Second City and what's a groundling? So you're looking it up and you're going, oh my.
Well, they're pretty well noted.
Yeah.
Well connected.
So you started with the midwife. How did you create the midwife?
First was to do a little bit of research about what midwifery was mm-hmm. at the time frame. The fact that I happened to be a nurse and ironically have never done labor and delivery or pediatrics. So it's, you know, who knew?
Well, neither had they, so.
Exactly. But I found it fascinating when I was doing the research. Hmm. There was so much information in terms of, you know, the things they didn't have. I keep coming back to that, that they didn't have this, they didn't have that. But still people managed to be born and live.
Yeah.
I think one of the most fascinating things to me was the fact that the nobility actually had a much higher mortality rate than the average townsfolk. And it was simply because at that point in time, the townsfolk would keep on doing what they were doing during the course of their pregnancy, and they'd still be out in the fields or hauling this and... They didn't change their normal day-to-day behavior, where the nobility were sequestered into a room literally for the last month or up to 3 months of their confinement,
bed rest.
In dark rooms with no light, no air, no... They had rich foods that were not probably the best for them, that sort of thing. So... they were really not in the best of health when they were about to deliver.
Oh, gosh.
So go figure.
Well, and you know, you decided to go to Lady Devereaux and you created this wonderful character. How did you build her at first?
Again, doing as much research as mm-hmm. I could in terms of the family history and the family ties and interactions. Mm-hmm. But I just realized... I had a year as Blanche Perry and then became Lady Devereaux when I joined the scripted cast.
Blanche Perry.
Blanche Perry was Queen Elizabeth's basically chief matron of honor or whatever.
Oh, okay. Yeah, now I remember that.
And that, although she was a very interesting character, I wasn't really able to develop a show around it or a way of interacting with people because she was very much within the court and that was it. She didn't interact with the townsfolk per se. She did not interact with anybody but the queen and the queen's court. She was an intermediary. I mean, she would keep people at bay because they had to go through her before they could have an interview or a
audience.
Thank you. I couldn't figure out words
for other people, but like I tell people constantly, I'm so glad English is my second language. I just really wish I had a first.
I like that. But as an audience with the Queen, she was very instrumental in terms of keeping a layer of protection for Queen Elizabeth. She was also keeper of the jewels, which was kind of a neat job, but, you know, we choose who gets what, that sort of thing. But primarily, I wanted to work this scripted cast this past year, mm-hmm. and it was at that point that I started doing the history of when I found out who the character was supposed to be, doing some research, and I really like it because of the fact that there is so much interaction with other characters that are in the court and that sort of thing.
It's one of those things where I try not to do for my characters as much research, because if I am going for a historically accurate character, or I'm trying to get somebody that somebody's going to go, oh, it's that person.
Mm-hmm.
I try to kind of play it as loose as possible, because normally I'm just like, oh, so what's my character this year? And they're like, here's your character. And I'm going, okay. And then you go off and you do the research about something specific, like, you know, being a bosun, or, you know,
right,
whatever you need on that part. And then you kind of develop the character from there, because, I mean, we don't have recordings of these people and
right,
so on and so forth. But it is really interesting to sit down and you start... Wikipedia is an addiction.
Yes, it is.
And so you sit there and you're like, oh, okay, they had their own little keep that they did things. And at night, they went down and pirated ships that were supposed to be safe in their cove.
Oh,
and, you know, and Kristen and I played two characters that would eventually marry. But mm-hmm, they were, you know, two nobles that their family would rob from the boats that came into their harbor.
Well.
And she played her character a little crazy, because at the end of the woman's life, she lost her marbles a bit.
Okay, that happens
so
too.
We had a lot of like comedy jokes in our interactions that worked out well. But so have you worked at any other fair, or have you tried
have
to work
not.
At any other fair? It's
sucked in here. Fell for it hook, line, and sinker. What can I say?
It's like, bring your friends. When as you hear a bunch of us in the background, one of us.
Unfortunately, working full time
mm-hmm,
kind of precludes doing that much travel.
No, I get you. And a lot of us just end up trying to do like guest cast somewhere for like a weekend.
And I may get into that at some point in time, but I haven't yet.
Yeah, because you have Lady Deborah.
I have other things to do.
Totally understand.
Because I still do theater.
Wow, yeah.
Lately, mostly working behind the scenes and doing front of house and that sort of thing, or providing props and set dressing, which is why I have a house full of stuff.
I think we've all done that a little bit.
Yes.
We've all helped out that small theater company that needs that one thing.
Oh, yes. Without a doubt. And, of course, there is my other profession of clowning.
Yes! Okay, so let's go with your professional, because you are a nurse.
Correct.
And you've been nursing for a very long time.
40 plus years.
Well, and we weren't going to go into specifics.
That's okay.
But what made you decide on being a nurse? Because, I mean, that kind of adds to the character of why you decided to do
Brutally
all this
honest,
other crazy stuff. Go for it.
I was given a choice of nursing or teaching. My mother was very old school, and those were the only two acceptable professions for women. And they were paying for college, so... I'm also the first woman in my family to go to college, so...
I am the first male... I'm first person in our... In mm-hmm, my family, my dad's family, and my mom's family to go to college full. So...
If they foot the bill, I will go where they tell me.
You got to kind of work within that frame.
Yeah, that's sort of kind of. But
I totally get that.
I've been fortunate. I started out doing medical surgical, which most everybody does mm-hmm, for a while. Ended up working in post-anesthesia recovery for about 7-8 years.
That is the best place to work.
Waking up people from anesthesia, which was a lot of fun.
I was one of those people several times.
Oh, God. But I was also a military wife, so moving around kind of eclipsed that very quickly.
Well, that's one of those professions where wherever you go...
You generally find a job.
Yeah, you're going to find a spot that somebody's like, we could use a nurse.
Absolutely.
And that's what gets me into this transition, because not only did you become a nurse... You know, amazingly accredited. You do community theater. You're in VARF. But you also clown. And I really want to know what that transition was from nursing to, you know what, I'm going to go become a clown.
I got into clowning literally on a dare. I was dared to take a class that was being presented, and it was a 12-week class at the time. And by the second class, I knew this is something I really like doing.
Mm-hmm.
Hook, line, and sinker. I left my graduation from my little clown class to go to clown camp at the University of Wisconsin La Crosse, which has been around for about almost 30 years.
Wow.
And it was a week of intensive, literally, 8-hour-a-day training. Everything from the very bare-bones basic beginnings of how to put makeup on and that sort of thing, how to start putting together a costume, but also learning all the skills.
Mm.
Juggling, that sort of thing.
Balance. Control.
All of the things that go along with it. A lot of character development,
mm-hmm.
which is imperative. And I say skills are, all the hands-on skills are tools for the toolbox.
Mm-hmm.
But we also say the clowning comes from the heart. Yeah, you can be a clown in face only, mm-hmm. or you can be a clown who doesn't matter whether you have makeup on or not. That's how you interact with people.
Yeah.
And it, of course, plays anything theatric, mm-hmm. a la Varf. It comes in quite handy, thank you.
Oh, gosh. So that's one of the better stories. We have some really good stories. Zell, which is in a previous episode, he actually has a huge theater background.
Mm-hmm.
And was actually, and I can't remember what play, but it's in one play where there's like a small child that has like a couple of cuss words in their lines.
Ooh.
And it's just like, I didn't know this about Zell. Like, Zell has always been that wonderful, you know, dutiful guy in the militia who plays a slacker but works his butt off.
Yes.
And then suddenly he turns around and goes, oh no, I was an actor. Wait, what?
Surprise!
Like, it's not surprising, but it's a surprise that, you know, he's got that set.
Sure.
But with the clowning, you're going, you know what? I got this dare. I went to the camp. And where do you go after that?
You come back to your home alley, which is a local group.
Mm-hmm.
And I started teaching. So I've been teaching clown school since then.
Wow.
We run generally one course a year, runs around 12 to 15 weeks, depending on holidays and whatnot. It's learning the basics from putting on makeup, which takes mm-hmm. quite a while, developing your character, which is imperative,
mm-hmm.
and then adding the skills, the juggling, the magic, the face painting, the balloons, that sort of thing.
And don't let me forget, at the end, I'll have you plug for, you know, what you do with the hospitals, you know, your clown set, everything. I want to make sure that...
And I actually got into clowning primarily, of course, this was about the time frame that Patch Adams was quite popular,
mm-hmm.
the movie.
Yes.
And being medical, I wanted to be in a situation where I could go into a hospital room and not demand anything from the patient. Give them something. And along with the therapy dogs, we were literally the only thing that they can say no to. If they don't want a visit from the clowns, mm-hmm. they don't have to have a visit from the clowns.
And that's sometimes it's more satisfying for them to be
Absolutely.
Able to say no than it is because you're...
Well, you're in a situation where everything around you is either hurts or is invasive
or has to be done.
And that small inkling of control being given back to the patient,
mm-hmm.
you know, makes everybody calm down, settle. But we change the mood on the floor when we go there. In fact, I was there this morning.
We were talking about that.
Yes.
There was a Varf dance practice this morning, and I was like, okay, well, we'll just go from there, and we'll meet you later on the night. And you're like, no, I'm going to be at the hospital, and I'm going to be clowning. I was like, that's fine. We go from there.
Well, it's sort of a running joke, but every time we go to the hospital, there's one or two rooms that you go into and you do your spiel and your shtick, And the comment that from the patient, or at least the patient's family, is, "You made my day." Mm. That's my pay for that. Mm. It's just incredibly rewarding. It feeds my soul in order to be able to do that for people. And it's a lot of fun.
Well, it also sounds like it's a lot of hard work to get it started and ready so that you can...
It can be.
Well, we do the same thing for VARF.
Absolutely. You have to put in the time behind the scenes, either developing your character, which is across the board, developing your costume, your accoutrement that you bring with you, all that to enhance the character that you play.
You're literally giving them the props they need to understand that you're who you are.
Exactly.
Totally understand that. But yeah, it's just so amazing, because I knew you were a clown, but I didn't know you taught. And to come out of clown school and then go to clown camp, and now you're teaching clown camp. It's a transition of, I got this worked into my psyche in a week. I'm giving you a lot longer, but I'm showing you how to perfect this and bring it forward. And
well, it's a constant growing situation. Mm-hmm. There's a saying in clowning that one of my clown mentors, Leon Buttons, is his character named McBride. He was a former Ringling Brothers clown. Mm. And he used to say that when you're green, you grow. When you're ripe, you rot. So the intent there is that you're constantly upgrading or changing or developing, mm-hmm. or doing research or practicing, trying to fine-tune that character that you've developed. And it's so true. I go back to camp, and I'm now part of the faculty for the American Clown Academy in Forsyth, Georgia.
Wow.
In August. I'm actually the camp nurse, too, which is kind of dual duty, you know.
That's got to be highly entertaining. It's like, oh, you're hurt?
Nah, come on now. I have to take the hat off and actually do some work. But it's been an absolute thrilling ride over the years.
Wow.
To be able to do that. And I have a lot of really, really good friends that I've met. And we're all over the world. I have friends in Japan and South Africa and Europe and that sort of thing.
Wow.
Who are clowns. And we still chat up on Facebook and that sort of fun stuff.
Well, and that's one of those groups like a Ren Faire, or, you know, it's just, you meet people from all over the U.S., the world.
Oh, absolutely.
We have, when I was jousting, I have friends from Calgary, Canada, Australia, South America, which it threw me for a moment when he introduced himself, and I'm going, you're from where? He's like, yeah. I was like, I see you have a horse. I see you have equipment. Where did you get your equipment from? Like, I'm thinking United States, where if you need to find something, you go online or you search through your friends.
Exactly.
And you found. But it's not that these nations aren't developed. You're just going, you wouldn't think that in their culture they would lean toward that particular art or that.
There are some very different cultural differences in clowning.
I don't doubt.
It's very interesting.
Wow. So let's ask about your experiences at VARF. Oh, okay. Wait. One more. I have to ask, what is your clown's official name?
Surprisingly enough, it's PJ.
PJ.
PJ, like pajamas. Yeah. Or peanut butter and jelly is what I tell the kids.
There you go.
But I have multiple characters, depending on the situation that I'm in. All of them have the initials PJ. I'm too cheap to buy too many name tags. That's what it comes down
to. That's not cheap. That's efficient.
Frugal.
And thrifty. Frugal. We'll go with that one. But so PJ, and because I know you have,
I have an elf character. I do Mrs. Claus as well,
awesome.
Which is a blast. I have a cowgirl, and a pirate, and a fairy, and a princess.
That's awesome.
All those fun things.
That's just great.
Try to play toward what the situation or scenario is.
The person, I get that.
Absolutely.
Well, we're kind of trying to do constantly when we're at Varf. It's the same thing. You pulled yourself an experience bracket that just slides you right into fair. You're just like, been here, done this. Let me ask you about your experiences at Varf.
Because
you know, you have all of these wonderful experiences with clown and nursing and being a military wife and, you know, going through all this life and meeting all these friends and family. And now you've been with us for, what, 3 years?
Five years.
And what has been one of your more interesting experiences at Varf? Like, one of those ones where you just can't seem to forget it, and you come back into it and you're like, that was hysterical, or...
I've had several occasions where when I was playing the midwife, where I would go up and start doing my spiel to the young lady, and to be able to get into a detailed discussion about the history of midwifery and that sort of thing, and just, I had no idea. Oh my goodness. I'm so glad I live now, you know, that kind of thing.
Man.
I've had lots of silly occasions. One in particular that always comes to mind, when the character that was playing Lord Dudley approached the Queen.
Mm-hmm.
And there was some dialogue back and forth about him not knowing the birds and bees. So I was literally sent backstage with him to explain to him the birds and bees. And the sounds and the noises he came from that man were hysterical. And of course I walked out fanning myself going...
He's also a trained theater person.
Yes, he is, very much so.
I should say actor, but just he's very well experienced, very trained.
Oh yes.
And to, you know, hook up with a person like that, you're going, I know you. We can make
and,
this work.
We played this back and forth that you know, yes, I had to, being the sage that I am, I had to teach him a few things.
That sounds awesome.
Great fun.
Let's see. Do you have any good stories? Now, it doesn't have to be about stuff about outside, but it could be stuff like behind the scenes, during our training, when you were first learning. That just good experiences with other people in the cast, or something you didn't think was going to go right, or something that wasn't going to happen, and something you're just like, oh, okay. And
well, I was very fortunate at one point in time, because of my background in clowning and whatnot, to be able to do a class for the new people at Varf on mime-type movement and that sort of thing. It was a lot of fun, lots of exercises to be able to control your body the way you want to, so that you're not flopping and flailing all over the place.
Unless you're doing that on purpose, that's completely different.
And part of that goes in with the character development, because as your character develops a specific type walk or the way they handle things, all of those things kind of crystallize the character that they're trying to play. Walk is a big one.
Well, what we're going to do is we're going to take a pause for a moment,
sure.
And we're going to come right back in. And normally this is where I would put our upcoming commercial. We haven't recorded our upcoming commercials
yet.
So those will be very soon, hopefully. And we're going to take one moment, and we'll be right back with Pat Janelle and Renaissance Recall. Thank you much, and we'll see you in a minute. And welcome back to Renaissance Recall. We're here with Pat Janelle, and we're doing the second half of our hour. We've heard some amazing things and some stories, and now you're bringing your clown education into the Renaissance universe,
which has got to be very different for a lot of these new people and a lot of actors.
Oh, very much so. Well, a lot of people don't think about the physicality necessary in developing a character. You can't always do what you normally do.
No.
Funny story. When I was playing the midwife, there was a particular incident where we had to get somewhere fast, and I was running up the hill. As we all know, the hill. Well, Chris was right behind me and came up to me afterwards and said, "I didn't know you could move that fast." I told him very simply, "I play an old lady. I conserve my movement to be able to conserve my energy for the day." Oh. No kidding.
Which Chris should know, because Chris does the exact same thing. I mean,
exactly. If you are running at 110% the whole day, you're not going to last. There are periods of time, and of course I take full advantage of the fact that I'm no spring chicken, that when I can sit, I will sit.
Yes.
When I can walk slowly, I can walk slowly.
Take
my time.
Save your energy for the patrons.
Use the young people to help you do things.
It wasn't ask them, it was use them.
Exactly. Well,
I've done it too.
It's particularly nice when you're playing a nobility and you're talking to a townsfolk.
Go do this.
Here, I need you to take this over there. That sort of thing. Oh, can you carry this for me?
So let's talk about acting, because you're also an instructor now. You have, I'm guessing, a good amount of experience acting under your belt.
You could say that, yes.
So, how long have you been acting? And
well, I started out backstage as a techie. Again,
where we all partially start.
Mostly doing props and set dressing, set building, set design, that sort of thing. But the side note is that I like to sing. And the little company that I was working with finally decided to start doing musicals. I started auditioning for musicals. Guess what? I've been in the chorus. first show that I did was Godspell.
Wow, that's one I have not been
in. And of course, Godspell played the way it was originally written. The characters were dressed as clowns.
Oh.
So a lot of my wardrobe was on stage. Magic tricks, things like that, that were all used, and it worked out beautifully. Since that time, I played the Queen of Transylvania in My Fair Lady.
Nice.
Along with one of the housemaids and that sort of thing. Again, I'm not a solo singer. I'm a good ensemble singer.
Ensemble, duet, group.
Exactly. So, mostly in the background. I was in Fiddler on the Roof.
Nice.
As both a woman and a man.
Like you do.
Well, when you don't have enough people with any dance ability, and you have that lovely bottle dance, I played the little old man in the side because I could do all the moves except get up from kneeling. So I had two young men on either side of me that helped me up, and I play that part, you know, that kind of thing.
Wow. Oh my god.
Fun
gosh.
Stuff, yes, but we definitely had bottles on our head and it was a balancing act.
Oh my gosh, that's crazy.
Yes, it was. But a lot of fun.
I understand it's where you turn around and you just, what does the script say? The script says this. Really? Like you just look over your shoulder. Really?
Well, I am a prop person, so we did cheat a little bit.
There was some glue.
Glue and a few magnets.
Magnet. Okay, that was high tech. That was too high tech for my school at the time. You're just all of these things, and I mean, they always make our wonderful Pat. And
it's low boredom threshold is what it is.
Low boredom threshold. I can't be left alone too long or I get hooked. And
yes, indeed.
So what are some of your other hobbies? It could be related to fair, could be just, you know.
Gee, arts and crafts in lots of different respects.
Which fits right in with us.
I build props. That's the big thing. I started out truly building props, and I built pig's heads and cardboard cathedrals and things like that.
Wow.
You know, all sorts of weird stuff, and I'm very visually oriented, so if it's three-dimensional, I can do it.
Jeez.
I've seen pictures. Along with the clowning, I do face painting. So, got a little bit of artistic streak. What can I say?
Like, well, I learned how to paint my own. Let me just flip this around and see if I can... Okay.
Well, the hardest part about face painting is that you're working on a moving target. It looks
I've never
a lot
heard
easier.
It, I've never heard it described that way before. Because
well,
you got to go in and
take a four-year-old child, put him on a stool at eye level, because that's more comfortable to work that way.
Give them a soda and a cookie.
No, we leave everything else away because I don't want the goop in my face paints. But they have the attention span of a gnat, and when you're working, I have a vice grip on their head. Because I do not want to poke anybody in the eye. I don't carry enough liability insurance.
Oh, God.
But they're very cute. And, of course, the reveal is always priceless.
Oh.
Wow. You know, show this in a mirror.
Oh, jeez. So there's that. There's just all over the...
I do a little of everything. And that's of course, one of my little sidelines at the fair was to do the calligraphy for the certificates.
Which we actually have very few people that do full calligraphy, and you are.
Yeah.
They don't even. I can't even figure out how you write that quick. Because I did calligraphy a long time ago, and Kristen does calligraphy, and Katie does a little calligraphy, and. You know, I've known several people that do calligraphy.
No, I can't say that I do anything super fancy, but. It's all about how you hold the pen.
Yeah.
And it's practice more than anything else. I know that ever loving P word we talk
practice.
About. Practice.
But seeing you just bust them out, just like left and right, and I'm going, I can't even do that with a sword.
The hardest part about that is the number of, shall we say, weird spellings for names that you see on in this day and age.
Sean, 14 S's and an X.
Yeah.
We're not judging anybody, just... So, let's we're rolling around and we're having a good time on this one. What's your favorite show at the festival from the ones you've seen? I mean, you can have multiple. I'm not gonna bottle you.
I still have a near and dear to my heart is the Court of Love.
I can understand that.
I have been fortunate enough to be on the jury, shall we say.
The jury.
The judges stand a couple of times, and trying to come up with the quips and the comebacks is difficult.
What do they call it? They call it lead improv. Where
exactly.
You're being in charge and you're leading the show. And that's...
trying to direct the conversation in a way that doesn't get, shall we say, too risque.
Yes, we are a family-friendly event, and we do our best to stay within that parameter.
Absolutely.
But no, I have to say I've seen you a couple times on the Court of Love, and you've come up with some zingers.
Where they come from, I'm not sure. Lucky, I guess.
No, we do have one of the casts that we try to support each other a lot, and I've seen you just lock eyes with somebody from across and go, help.
Yes, very definitely.
And you are always the first one there when somebody else's eyes go looking for somebody else's to connect with. Help!
We do try.
We do try.
But I also like, of course, the music that goes along with the fair. And because I like to dance. I like to dance. So I have been known to dance in the pub at the end of the pub, sing a little Highland Fling or a jig here and that sort of thing.
I'm normally fought out. I've normally had a couple fights during the day, and I've gotten to that point where I'm just like, I can stand
it's
here.
It's called
and
pacing yourself. Pacing.
So we try so much, but you know, between the movement and the water and the heat and trying to entertain when we're not fighting, and then the fighting
exactly.
and then helping with court or entertaining with Her Majesty, and just because we move all over the place and we're
absolutely.
Trying to fill up our time and our space
and
entertain, and I know all of us are just, you know, we're tired at the end of the day.
Very definitely.
So, and some people that can get that last wind during.
Well, for me, there's something about good music that I can dance. I don't care how tired I am. I will dance.
It was like Pied Piper.
Yeah, pretty much.
And we're so lucky.
I'm sorry,
to have,
I can't keep the feet still.
You can't
what
keep
can
the
I
feet
say?
Still.
I won't be doing great big dance moves, but I'll at least tap my toes along with the music.
Yeah, and we have been incredibly fortunate with our entertainment direction to have, you know, just energizing musicians
to
come in.
Absolutely.
And you just, like, from half a fair away, suddenly you're tapping your foot for no reason. You're like, what am I? They're on stage and they're playing. Or
that fiddle when it goes. Woohoo!
Yes. The fiddle or the drumming
absolutely.
Or the thumping. Or you know, suddenly you'll hear a song bust out and you're just tapping your toe. And
that's right.
Trying to stay in character.
Trying.
And we that's one of our big things at VARF is that we try to stay in character the whole time, which is, it can be very difficult, especially when you have visitors and friends. And
certainly.
There's just a moment of, nope, I can't break character, it's not allowed, and we're not going to do that, so try as hard as you want. I'm just going to ignore you now.
Yes. Which I find really interesting, because some people get that and some people don't.
Mm-hmm.
And when they don't, it's like you want to strangle them. But other than that,
but they're normally your close
smiling,
family
and you say, I can't do that.
And then you have all the wonderful patrons who are so wonderful to talk to you and ask you questions, and they're so surprised when they're just like, oh, you're not just standing there to stand there, or you're just not gonna be in a show and separate yourself from us. And it's like, no, I'm literally right here in front of you, sir. And
yes,
I'm not
sir.
Going anywhere.
Yay, sir.
Yay, sir.
May I help thee?
We do get that one a lot,
how
though.
How may I help thee?
When you were doing the midwife, that was such a... Because I would normally be up the front, and I normally take what I call, like, first crack at the people coming through the gate. And it's not like I'm trying to put them off, but I'm trying to wake them up, because a lot of them are coming in, they don't know what they're going in for, and I want to kind of set the pace of, people are going to talk to you, and, you know, we're going to work with it. And you were always right off to my left, and always ready to just, like, you look lost, let me help you. Or, you know, I'm the midwife, let me, you know, take you over here.
One of the things that I did up at the front gate in the mornings was to hand out the quests for the children.
Mm.
And one of the first things on the quest was, do you know how to reverence? So I would teach children how to reverence, along with the parents. And, of course, play up all of the strange and silly things that go along with that.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, make Daddy and Mommy learn how to reverence so that they can show the kids, or have the kids show Mom and Dad mm-hmm. that they've learned that, so they can check it off on their list.
Yeah.
And then direct them out to other places in the fair.
Oh, it was... And I didn't see a single person not just walk right up to you, because you're so approachable and so, like, just have that...
Thank you, sir.
You have that aura of just, I'm here, I
can
be helpful.
I'm the tubby old grandma that...
Tubby.
Oh, well. But the bottom line is that I'm safe.
You're very comfortable. People are relaxed around you, and it shows. I mean, you can tell from, like, 20 feet away.
Yeah, I like people.
Yeah, I mean, unlike, you know, some of our wonderful friends that are, like, contradictions. Like, Meyer's size, but how gentle he is.
Yes, gentle giants is what I call
them. Yeah, and how I'm normally a fairly nice guy, but I always play
scary. You play mean, scary people.
I play mean, scary people.
Or we have Tony, who's such a well-known actor, being kind of like a bumbling noble, you know, and having, you know, Stacy, who's such just a hip, you know, woman who plays our queen.
Talented.
And
beyond
she,
belief.
Yes. Who doesn't show any of that. She's just the most down-to-earth. She's that person you want to hang out with at the coffee shop and just, you know, shoot the proverbial. And she just suddenly just turns around and becomes Elizabeth, and you can feel...
Oh, yes.
...her presence, and you're just, whoa. And we have so many other wonderful characters and people, and you fit in with us so well.
Thank you.
Like, it was like, no, that's Pat, because when I said 3 years and you said five, and I'm going, wow, it's been that long. Not because, you know, I wasn't paying attention, it was just you... seem to just click right in, and the time goes by.
Well, I keep saying this is more of a tribe for me than anything else. Trust me.
We know each other. We understand each other here.
Well, it's one of the few places that I've been able to come in and to be able to use a lot of the talents that, whether they're really good or not, but lots of them rather than just one or two.
Yeah.
It's a little less specialized. That's me, less specialized.
A lot of experience, a lot of knowledge. Let's try to do something with this.
Yeah.
So I also have the
it
little...
also means it's not boring, you know.
Yes.
For me, the variety is what I particularly enjoy.
Because you just can't get through that day where it's so slow and you're trying to chug uphill like the little engine that could, because just everything, it's normally when we don't have a lot of patrons or we have really bad weather or...
Yeah, we can do without the bad weather.
Yeah,
that
we
would
can,
be really nice.
We don't have to have a single drop of rain this year. I will go for Savannah at this point.
Yeah.
But on that other side, it's... when we have the patrons, it's just the time disappears.
Oh, the days go so quickly.
Quick.
It's
and
amazing.
We love those. But let's go with a little fun thing that we like to do. I like to call it What's on Your Belt.
All right.
And because especially with you, because you're a prop builder and designer.
Very definitely.
And so that makes it kind of like a different thing where you're going, it's not, let me find this whistle at Goodwill, or let me find this... you know, little bowl that I can use to eat out of at the militia. You're just like, I want something very specific.
Well, yes. Starting out as the midwife, on my belt, let's see, what did I have?
Of course, so you have a couple belts you
I
have
had
to talk about now.
Skirt hikes, of course, to keep the skirts up.
Mm-hmm.
That sort of thing, my overskirt.
Now, for those of you who don't know what a skirt hike is, it's two metal rings hanging off of leather, and then you pull the skirt up through one
up
of the
through
rings.
Up through that and back through.
And back through the second one, and it holds your skirt
It
up.
Also creates a pocket.
Yes.
Which is, in that day and time, you didn't have pockets. So
no.
It was how women carried stuff.
Yeah, and they didn't want to hold it.
When they didn't want to hold it in their hands. Of course, I always have my pouch with my personal medications and that sort of thing, because we all do that for safety's sake.
We have our what we call our pouch of reality.
Yes. So. And of course, there's also usually a few pennies in there, so I can shop. What woman doesn't like to shop?
That's, okay, I like to shop too. We're not going to argue that.
But of course, had my tankard, so I could...
Your mug.
Mug, so I could drink what I needed to drink, and... usually had one or two little vials of something, little glass vials that a midwife would carry for a tincture of this or a syrup of that, the medications that she would give.
A little bit of potioning.
Potioning, absolutely. Potioning. That, and of course, I always carried a basket with me. Mm. And the basket would, of course, contain cloths that you would use for swaddling the baby or something on that order. And, of course, my eating utensils and everything else were buried underneath that.
Which I finally got this year. I finally got eating utensils. I've just been kind of going in the back and eating with my hands and washing really well.
Well, I did upgrade when I became a noble woman.
A noble woman.
I have what is actually a pickle fork. So I can keep my fingers out of my food. It's wonderful.
when Kristen handed me, because we bought one of my first nice doublets. And I had the doublet. We had customized it. We had to bring it in a little bit. We had kept it wide in the shoulders. And so I got it, and she turned and she goes, "I think you need utensils." And I went, "Why?" I was like, at one point, I had like a piece of food in my doublet sleeves. I was like, "I think I do too."
Yeah, that would generally help. Sort of, kind of. And as I moved up to Lady Devereaux, rather than a belt per se, she has a chain, of course. It's very decorative.
Better decorative.
But I have more things hanging off of it, too.
It's smaller, but I'm doing more stuff.
I have, of course, my drinking glass, which is a goblet.
Because the ladies normally go more with goblets.
Goblets, and, so as opposed to a tankard.
Be a bit more dainty.
Oh, yes. Oh, absolutely.
Yes.
And I, of course, have my fan.
Oh, no lady can be in court without a fan.
Particularly after you wear 4 or 5 layers of clothing in 90 degree
weather. Today I decided
to
wear a lazy boy. Wear a couch.
Yes, indeed. Very, very definitely a difference in my midwife costume and Lady Devereaux in terms of temperature.
Yes.
More easily regulated.
Difference between the shirt with the very light, like, leather
cotton.
Jerkin or...
I had a cotton bodice.
The cotton jerkin to... You know, more Captain Noble-ish, where you have, like, the full shirt underneath, the full doublet, the sleeves, the gloves, the...
And, of course, as a lady, you're talking the corset and the farthingale.
So many more
and
layers.
Underskirt, the overskirt, the foreskirt,
The only time I can even complain is when I'm in full plate. It's like...
Exactly.
It's like with... we've had ladies in the court go, "Are you hot in that?" And I've looked down at them in my helmet and go, "Shh, are you hot in that?"
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
Bottom
I am.
Line? Yes. Yeah, you're perfect tea kettle.
Perfect.
Steam rising.
Steam. Oh.
But the probably the most important addition as a noble woman, man, I can't talk. were a timepiece.
Yes.
I now have a pocket watch that's jewel encrusted.
Nice.
I found it from one of the vendors at the fair, which is
the wonderful vendors that
yes.
If we don't have something, they look for it and
yes,
help us
they
out.
Do. Mm. So I of course help. That helps a lot in terms of keeping me where I'm supposed to be at the right time.
Mine broke one day. I had to ask patrons. I was asking them randomly because I was like, "My timepiece is broken," which it had. And I'd show them that it was broken, and they were like, "Oh yeah, it's so and so o'clock." I was like, "Thank you, sir."
How stands the hour?
How stands the hour?
But the most important addition this past year is my magnifying glass, because I have to wear reading glasses, and rather than having non-period glasses, I have a glass.
There's going to be some research there, because I've seen a couple of historical shows and a couple different historical comments where they actually had like a single glass, like almost like a monocle, mm-hmm. or some of the ladies actually had two monocles
mm-hmm.
that they would wire together and hold in front of their...
Amazing!
I'm hoping that that's historically accurate so that, you know, because we
right
all
now,
get to that
it's
point.
It's about a 2-inch diameter glass, so I can actually see stuff.
But,
read the fine print, you know.
But for those of you who are going to be coming and joining us at fair, these are a couple of things that are really helpful, especially depending on where you are. A fan for any lady or any woman in the Shire, a timepiece so you can get to where you're going. These are all things that really take into consideration, because a lot of our actors and our staff have had to go through that baptism by fire of... What do I need? And, you know, something got, you know, forgotten or missed, and or it was something they didn't think about. And they were like, "Oh, I'll get that." And then they forgot about it. And it's a good thing to hear some of these out. And I like this portion of the show because it gives me the option to hear what other people have done.
Mm-hmm.
And we literally had one person who said, "Yeah, I put pockets in my vest that I added on. And that's the only way I can carry stuff."
I hadn't even thought about that. Next bodice I build is going to have pockets.
You're going to be that one woman who turns around and goes, "You love my dress? Check out the pocket."
Yeah.
Yes. Oh.
And I actually have seen it done because there's a... Excuse me.
It happens.
The four-part that is shown is usually ornate and decorative, but it's only a small portion of the skirt that's actually underneath the overskirt.
Yes.
Slipped next to the four-part are a couple of pockets, so that you have you might have to do a little twisting to get to it, but you have some place to put a hanky or something on that order.
The little tips and tricks. And
absolutely.
Oh, gosh.
The lipstick.
Or
lip balm, trying to keep your lips from getting chapped.
I wear two belts. I wear a actual, like, normal style buckle belt, which is acceptable for the time. And I wear a swordsman's belt over top of it.
Ah.
And it's so that the belt is wide enough and deep enough that it sits on my hip and my stomach and I can carry all this weight, you know, the sword and the pouches.
Well, so that is the advantage of being a noblewoman, though, because I wear the bum roll. Underneath, it does help support the weight of anything that you put over top of it.
And it doesn't do any pinching or anything.
Exactly. So,
and if clothes don't fit right, it's going to be a pain the entire day.
Oh yes.
We build for comfort on our clothes. They're not temperature comfortable, but we do build them for comfort.
Oh yes.
But no, and I think it's a good one for this one. I think we've kind of hit the edge.
Hit the high points.
The time. And then we're going to do a breakout session after this.
Oh, okay.
So we'll sit down. We'll probably drag somebody else in and we'll shoot the proverbial.
Okay.
It's the cleanest way I can say that.
I understand.
I try. Normally we'll end up with so many cusses. This has been one of the least cussing.
Bleep, bleep, bleep. Well, I'll tell you, being a clown for as long as I've been a clown, the first thing you do is delete the expletives. And it was hard at first because I had a bit of a potty mouth for a while. And now I get around it fairly well.
Well, and that's, in bringing that back up, that is a huge separation, because I've met a lot of nurses, a lot of paramedics, and they don't hold back on their speech because it's, you know, you deal with life and death every day.
Absolutely.
And you're just like, I don't have time for censorship. But that's why I said it was such an interesting change when you went from, like, a nurse, you know, never underestimating the protector of life and death, you know, adding on doctors and, you know, so on and so
Certainly.
Forth. But to go into clowning and be not only the protector of, you know, their life, so to speak, but protector of their mind and kind of like their psychology, and being there so that other professionals that you have been with and worked with before take care of their job while you're...
Well, I say universally that my primary job is stress reduction management. In all forms.
But Pat, we are so thrilled to have you with us. We always are. And we do practice dances together, and we've hung out, and we've gone out to, like, lunches at our favorite place, which I'm not going to say yet because I'm going to have to get permission to tell them about that particular place.
Absolutely.
But, you know, we're great to have you. It's great to been having you on here. And we're going to wrap up the introduction portion of it, and we're going to move on to the next one.
That sounds wonderful. It's my pleasure, I assure you.
So, but we look forward to seeing you in the past. This is Renaissance Recall. Help us bring history to life. Come out and play with us. And my name is Jim Miller, and I've been your host for the day. And we'll see you guys really soon. Talk to you later. And follow us on our social media sites. And please share us with a friend, or share us with a cast member, or another Rennie in your life. We're all about sharing. So come back and see us soon. Or listen to us soon. See us. Oh, yeah, I just did that. Remind me not to go talk to anybody that has any type of... Yeah. Talk to you later. Bye.
Jamboree, ho, jamboree, ho, your ringtail sailors coming out behind. Ho, jamboree, ho, jamboree, jenny, keep your tailpiece warm.
Now, me lad. here for Lundy's Isle. It holds quite near, so it's way down below. And stow your gear, Jimmy, keep your tailpiece warm. Ha! Jamboree, ho! Jamboree, ho! Your ringtail sailors coming up behind. Ha! Jamboree, ho! Jamboree, to keep your tailpiece warm. Hartland Point's coming up in sight. On the port bow, sitting Lundy's Light, we'll be stroking up some fires tonight. Jenny, keep your tailpiece warm. Ha! Jamboree, ho! Jamboree, ho! Your ringtail sailors coming up behind. Ha! Jamboree, ho! Jamboree, Jenny, keep your tailpiece warm. Pilot cutters coming up ahead. There'll be no more horse meat or hardtack bread. Tonight we'll sleep in your feather bed. Jenny, keep your tailpiece warm. Ha! Jamboree, ho! Jamboree, ho! Your ringtail sailors coming up behind. Ha! Jamboree, ho! Jamboree, Jenny, keep your tailpiece warm. We'll make port by the end of day. We can see the girls standing on the quay. And as we leave, we'll be getting our pay. So, Jimmy, keep your tailpiece warm. Ho! Jamboree! Ho! Jamboree! Ho! Your ringtail sailors coming up behind. Ho! Jamboree! Ho! Jamboree! Jimmy, keep your tailpiece warm. Several weeks on shore, but a sailor lad, he must roam forevermore. So it's fare thee well to me, Liverpool whore. Jenny, keep your tailpiece warm.
Come on!
Ho! Jamboree, ho! Jamboree, ho! Your ringtail sailors coming up behind. Ho! Jamboree, ho! Jamboree, Jenny, keep your tailpiece warm.
Look at me then!
Jamboree, ho! Jamboree, ho! Your ringtail sailors coming up behind. Ho! Jamboree, ho! Jamboree, Jenny, keep your tailpiece warm.
One, two, three, four!
Jamboree, ho! Jamboree, ho! Your ringtail sailors coming up behind. Ho! Jamboree, ho! Jamboree, Jenny, keep your tailpiece. Jenny, keep your tailpiece. Jenny, keep your tailpiece warm.
Of call, hey, naughty, naughty!
Welcome to our newest segment, Ask an Amnesiac, for all that knowledge from someone who's never known what he's talking about. Hello, Bruno.
Hello. It's very nice to meet you.
It's very nice to meet you, too. Now, we have a couple of questions from our listeners on social media. Now, these are people you're never going to meet.
I have information that they'll never hear.
I think that actually works out perfectly.
Why is it social media?
We'll work on that later.
That's fine.
Let's focus on our first question.
We have a question.
We do.
Are we doing one or are we going to do multiple? Because if we do multiple, I might get lost.
We're going to do multiple, but we'll do them only one at a time.
Oh, that's amazing. Could we take like whole weeks in between asking?
I think that would be best.
That's a great idea. I like that a lot. I like that. That's amazing.
See, Bruno, that was you using your brain.
Don't tell me that. I'll forget it.
Well, it was that really strenuous feeling and the smell of smoke. That was you.
Oh,
I thought that was the forge.
Anyway.
That was you. It was much closer.
So, what are we doing here again?
Well, Bruno, you're going to answer a question that one of our listeners had.
Okay, they're hearing me. They're listening to something. Very well, very well. What is the question?
How do you woo a woman?
How do you woo a woman? Well, very well. First, you have to find a woman.
That would be
sometimes
the first step.
That's very difficult. And occasionally you should verify.
Tackling her from behind is never an okay way to meet someone.
No. It doesn't work for militiamen. It doesn't work for horses.
No.
So what you do is you have to be clean. You have to get your body clean, and you have to get your clothes clean, and you have to get your face clean, and you have to think clean, and you have to go to the church and get clean.
You should give her something to remember you by, and that something should not be lice.
And that's very important. And you should get your best vest of pockets and make sure all of your body parts are there. And then you approach her very slowly, not fast. Because if you run at women, they have a tendency to run as well. So you take very long time, nice and slow. You say good morrow. And then you look deep into her eyes and you go, woo. And that's how you woo a woman.
Is that as simple as that?
It's that simple.
Well done, Bruno.
Thank you. I'm very glad you asked me because I can't remember a thing I just said.
It's all right. I have a feeling that some of our listeners, no matter how often they may practice wooing women, always need this kind of a reminder.
Oh, well, thank you. Thank you for this is an amazing thing. I hope to see and hear from you soon.
Oh, I can basically guarantee it.
Oh, good.